And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is changes. Each of the segments today will talk about changes that are happening right now. This next segment is something new. It's a call-in segment. Several of my listeners have requested this. I'm going to open up the mic and let callers express whatever is on their mind. We'll look at whatever topics you want to tackle. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, if you've got a topic you want to call in, give us a call at 639-0008. This segment's called What's on Your Mind, Ventura County. It's a new segment each Tuesday where you turn the tables on me. Instead of me interviewing a guest, you get to call in and interview me with whatever's on your mind. The call-in number is 639-0008. Call in and share what's on your mind. Talk about national, international, state, or even local topics. I want to hear from you. What's going on right now in your world? Call in and share it. What's got you puzzled? What's got you frustrated? Call in and share that too. No topic is off limits. If you're a regular listener, you know that I address a wide range of subjects on the show. That's because you, my listeners, you want to hear more about the world around you. Now it's time to call in and discuss some of these topics in more detail. The call-in number is 639-0008. All right, to get things started, let's talk about a news story that is just breaking right now. It happened this morning. Devin Sharma, who was the former CEO at S&P, he is out. He announced that he resigned today, and I say resigned in quotation marks, as the CEO. This is coming just 2 weeks after Standard & Poor's downgraded the United States credit rating to AA+ from AAA, the first time in our country's history that we have ever been downgraded from a AAA rating. President Obama's administration was quick to retaliate with words about the downgrade. So let's listen to what Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner had to say about the downgrade.
Well, let's just start with this particular judgment by S&P. I mean, I think S&P's shown really terrible judgment, and they've handled themselves very poorly, and they've shown a stunning lack of knowledge about basic U.S. fiscal budget math. And I think they drew exactly the wrong conclusion from this budget agreement.
And that was Timothy Geithner. He was talking to John Harwood of CNBC in that particular interview. And it shouldn't come as any surprise to anyone listening that Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, when the credit rating of the United States gets downgraded to an AA+, would be the first to stand up and defend the administration, also defend that the S&P may have had the wrong approach on this. Let's go ahead and let's listen to what President Obama had to say upon hearing the news that our credit rating was downgraded to AA+.
Markets will rise and fall, but this is the United States of America. No matter what some agency may say, we've always been and always will be a AAA country.
Well, that's very encouraging to hear from the president that he believes we will always be a AAA country. But in the eyes of S&P, which is one of the three major credit rating agencies, the United States credit, is not as strong as it once was. So, yes, it is good to be a cheerleader, and it's wonderful to say words of encouragement like that. But when you go to the bank and you have to borrow money, in our case, we borrow money from the Chinese and the Japanese, when we go to do that, tends to be a little bit more expensive when your credit rating goes down to an AA+ from a AAA. And that's only the beginning of what I will call the blame game that the administration is putting on. So let's hear what Timothy Geithner had to say about the negotiations between Republicans and Democrats as we were trying to raise the debt ceiling, which was the impetus of our downgrade.
Do you feel that you or the administration's policies are in any way responsible for this downgrade?
Oh, absolutely not. You've seen the president work incredibly hard and make really amazing progress trying to heal the damage caused by this terrible crisis. And you saw him work his heart out to try and bring both parties together to reach agreement on a long-term fiscal deal. Made some progress, didn't solve it all, but a very good down payment, very strong bipartisan support for that down payment. And we got a lot of work ahead of us still, though.
A lot of work ahead of us. That goes without saying that the United States has a long way to go to repair its credit, just as anybody would if they went into personal bankruptcy, have to fight for 7 years in order to resume the credit. The United States is going to have to go through a process to regain the AAA credit rating. It may not take 7 years, but it will certainly be a part of that. The part I found interesting in Timothy Geithner's answer there to John Harwood was that he said the president was fighting very, very hard to reconcile Republicans and Democrats in both the House and the Senate. And while that was true, there was a lot of last-minute firefighting that went on the part of the administration. All of this could have been solved a whole lot easier months before. In fact, the month of January of 2011, this whole problem could have been solved. In negotiating some other things with Congress, the president could easily have said or negotiated in an automatic increase in the debt ceiling at that time in January, but chose not to. Whether that was a conscious choice on his part to create the wrangling that just happened before the S&P downgrade, or whether that was an oversight based on inexperience and lack of political knowledge, we will never know until his memoirs come out. And even then, we may never know the truth. But the reality is that a seasoned politician would have tied the debt ceiling increase to earlier legislation in January, which would have prevented the morass that we got ourselves into in July of 2011. So there we are. Now, Devin Sharma is out. He is the CEO of S&P, the company that downgraded the United States credit rating to AA+ from AAA. Let's hear what Devin Sharma had to say in an interview with Maria Bartiromo about S&P's judgment.
Credit rating company. He joins us now in a first on CNBC interview. Devin, nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, Maria.
As you look back to what has occurred in the last year and a half, do you think that the ratings agencies were part of sort of the confusion in terms of what went wrong?
Well, clearly, sir, we are a player in the marketplace in terms of providing an independent benchmark on credit risk, and part of the capital markets, particularly in the mortgage-based securities, was a disappointment for everybody, including us.
Sure.
And so, you know, there are things that we have learned, we have reflected, and we've been making a lot of changes around that.
And what Devin Sharma was talking about there was the S&P's rating of AAA of some of the collateralized debt obligations back in 2008 that led to the overall financial collapse. So now Devin Sharma is out. The question that I have for you, and call in 639-0008 if you've got an opinion on this, was Devin Sharma's quitting, his resignation today, was that reprisal on the part of the Obama administration for the S&P downgrade, or did it have its roots in other more serious bad decisions that Sharma may have made? One can argue very clearly that Geithner and President Obama were not happy about the S&P decision, and they put undue pressure on S&P, Standard & Poor's, to fire Mr. Sharma. Of course, the other camp might say that his resignation had nothing to do with the S&P downgrade of the United States credit rating. It really had to do with decisions that Standard & Poor's made 2, even 3 years ago regarding collateralized debt obligations, which had absolutely no foundation in reality, were rated AAA. So people bought those CDOs based on the AAA rating that S&P gave them when those CDOs, in fact, were nothing but junk, and that was the precipitating factor in the economic decline. Call in at 639-0008 if you've got an opinion on this. Let us know if you think this is reprisal or if this is just a firing based on some earlier bad decisions. But while you call in, here's the dilemma that I want you to think about, and you're going to have to make a decision here. First of all, do we distrust Standard & Poor's because of their bad judgment over collateralized debt obligations and negate any credit ratings that we get from Standard & Poor's about all of the other financial instruments? In other words, do we make Standard & Poor's a non-player, which the government is trying to do? Or do we really worry about politics entering into the credit rating business? And politics seeping over into the business world. Which is more fearful for you? Call in at 639-0008 if you've got an opinion on that. Let us know what you think. Either one of those two choices is very disturbing, and I would love to hear what you have to say about that. All right, let's move on. Topic number two, tattoo parlors. Somebody needs to help me understand tattoo parlors. Give me a call at 639-0008. Yes, I get the whole idea about tattoos and body art. Body art has been around for really centuries, probably since the beginning of time. It is a form of self-expression. I am all about that, and I understand that people can make their own choices. What I am concerned about is the proliferation of tattoo parlors that we see. If you look back over last year, the year 2010, the new business starts in the city of Ventura. Many of those new business starts were tattoo parlors. So as we were going in through this economic collapse that we are facing, the new businesses that were starting to spring up in replacement of some of the older businesses that went out were tattoo parlors. The question that I've got is, why do we need so many tattoo parlors? I mean, are there that many people going out and getting tattoos these days that supply is just meeting the demand for tattoos? Or are we just seeing an easy way for Ventura and other cities, it's not just Ventura, to gather revenue from business licenses and business taxes from these tattoo parlors that crop up, with no regard as to whether a tattoo parlor business is good for the local economy, with no regard to what effect it might have on young people and their decision-making as well? Call in 639-0008 if you've got a thought on this, and let me know what you think. Here's the challenge that I have. Tattoo parlors cropping up all over the place. We really need businesses that are going to hire people and hire people at much higher salaries than a tattoo parlor. In fact, Ventura, the city of Ventura, just had a resignation of their business development manager. This man leaving office, his legacy is going to be the proliferation of all of these tattoo parlors that we're talking about. That's hardly a legacy that I would want as a business manager of a city. Yes, when I came to town, there were 10 tattoo parlors. When I left, we had raised that number to 30, and I'm proud of that fact. The reality is tattoo parlors generate jobs, that's true, maybe one or two jobs, but they are low-paying jobs, a cut above minimum wage because the tattooists are artists themselves, but they are certainly not the types of jobs that are going to sustain economies. They're not the types of jobs that are going to create the type of wealth and income that you need to buy a home, the type of wealth and income that you need to go out and shop to buy new cars. In other words, you're not going to make the type of salary that we really want to attract into Ventura County. If you've got a thought on this, give us a call, 639-0008. Are tattoo parlors just a symptom of an overall epidemic, or are tattoo parlors really the answer to our economic woes here in Ventura County? Give us a call, 639-0008. Let us know what you think. Topic number three, Arab Spring. Arab Spring has turned to Arab Summer. We are now starting to see the fall of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, and it seems very clear from all of the news reports that Gaddafi is on his way out, which is a good thing if you don't like despots and dictatorial rulers. That is a plus for the world if he should leave. The big question that I have is, where was the U.S. foreign policy in all of this? I need someone to call in, 639-0008, and explain to me what the Obama administration's foreign policy was when it comes to Libya. Now, let's go back to the beginning of the Obama administration when he was in Egypt, one of his first overseas trips as president of the United States. He made a speech in Egypt which was very, very conciliatory towards the Arab nations and Islam in general. He wanted to, in his opinion, repair bridges that had been burned by President George W. Bush before him and extend an olive branch to the Arab world. All right, that sounds very interesting and good. You extend the olive branch, but look at some of the actions since then. President Obama has increased our war in Afghanistan by sending in more troops, having a surge there. He, in fact, did find and kill Osama bin Laden, which is something that the American people applaud as an act, although it might have been better to have bring Osama bin Laden to trial and make a showcase out of the trial. However, bin Laden is out of the way. And then, where was the policy when it comes to Libya? That's what I want to know. Gerald from Santa Paula wants to talk about it. Gerald, how are you today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to, I'm actually kind of going back to your first topic.
Okay, let's do that.
I was just without some of the particulars, I was just struck by the incredible complexity of the entire thing and how difficult it is to actually evaluate some of the economic things. I was just watching a kind of an interesting thing on the TED Talks.
Oh, yes.
TED.com.
Yes.
And it had to do with the speed at which some of the things are evaluated and occurring, like on Wall Street, and they were talking about how some of the algorithms that are used to disguise financial transactions, like a large transaction, you may not want to really provide the whole clue of what it is that you're doing.
Yes,
they break them up into very small things, and mm-hmm. they're talking about the speed at which these things are occurring, is resulting in some of the large buildings along Wall Street being essentially hollowed out so that rather than have people inside of them, they're putting in some of the large servers because the speed is so fast that that milliseconds make a difference.
And they absolutely do, Gerald. I mean, that's amazing. I'm glad that you referenced that because the computerized trading is one of the things that people are blaming Wall Street for this rapid decline that we're seeing in the Dow from where we were at a height of almost 12,000, 13,000 on the Dow down to where we are today, about 10,000. And the servers that you're referring to really don't exist in New York City and Manhattan because the real estate's too expensive there. The servers really reside next to the Dow Jones buildings out in New Jersey. And the name of the game is to have your server closer to the main computer, the main mainframe for the Dow Jones Industrial Average because speed and distance make a difference here. So the closer you can get to that, the faster that you can make these transactions. So big guys like Carl Icahn that want to come in and buy up large shares of companies without it becoming public too quickly will scatter their investments over multiple brokers. And all of those brokers hit these servers with computerized trading in order to buy the shares that they want. And that computerized trading, the speed that you referred to, Gerald, the speed at which these trades happen, can cause wild fluctuations in the market. And we've seen this over the last few days, fluctuations of 300, 400 points up and down and up and down. And that's some of the volatility that we're seeing. Here's the challenge, though. With our interest rates being as low as they are and our credit rating being downgraded, which makes our interest rates need to be even lower, what the challenge is, people who have money, who want to make money, have to find unique ways in order to get higher interest. And the way that they do that typically is they look for more exotic types of instruments. These collateralized debt obligations were one of those exotic types of instruments. This rapid trading that you see is another way in which people can make money. They can go in and get just fractions of a percentage of interest on their investments. And over the course of a day, week, or a year, that adds up to millions, if not tens of millions of dollars. So this is a huge problem that we're faced with in this country that computerized trading would do. Two things would solve that. Number one is to reinstate what they call the uptick rule. The uptick rule was a rule that was done away with in the Clinton administration that said you cannot buy a stock on the way down. You have to wait for that stock to uptick, to go up, before you can buy it and short it and let it go down even farther. If we were to reinstate the uptick rule, that would get rid of some of the volatility. And then on the computerized trading side, we'd have to come up with some equitable way of managing the computerized trading. I know it's a very complex issue, Gerald, but you bring it up. You got it from one of the most interesting sites on the internet. That's TED.com. And if my listeners haven't heard of TED.com after the show today, wait until after the show. Go over to TED.com and check it out because really you've got some of the great thought leaders of the United States that are there.
I highly recommend it. I think it's I treat it almost like a little bit of a like a mental vitamin pill or something. You get a chance to pull in some of the just really cutting edge thinking in any number of fields, and just kind of get a little distillation of it in a really short span of time. And I think it's an incredibly powerful site.
What a great analogy, a mental vitamin pill. I'm going to write that down, Gerald, because that's a good one. Thanks so much for calling in and being a guest and a loyal listener to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you later.
My pleasure. You do a great job.
Thanks so much.